Page 16. Chapter 3. Okonkwo did not have the start in life which many young men usually had. He did not inherit a barn from his father. There was no barn to inherit. The story was told in Umuofia of how his father, Unoka, had gone to consult the oracle of the hills and the caves to find out why he always had a miserable harvest. The oracle was called Agbala, and people came from far and near to consult it. They came when misfortune dogged their steps, or when they had a dispute with their neighbors. They came to discover what the future held for them, or to consult the spirits of their departed fathers. The way into the shrine was a round hole at the side of a hill, just a little bigger than the round opening into a henhouse. Worshippers and those who came seeking knowledge from the god crawled on their belly through the hole and found themselves in a dark, endless space in the presence of Agbala. No one had ever beheld Agbala, except his priestess, but no one who had ever crawled into his awful shrine had come out without the fear of his power. His priestess stood by the sacred fire, which she built in the heart of the cave, and proclaimed the will of the god. Page 17. The fire did not burn with a flame. The glowing logs only served to light up vaguely the dark figure of the priestess. Sometimes a man came to consult the spirit of his dead father or relative. It was said that when such a spirit appeared, the man saw it vaguely in the darkness, but never heard its voice. Some people even said that they had heard the spirits flying and flapping their wings against the roof of the cave. Many years ago, when Okonkwo was still a boy, his father, Unoka, had gone to consult Agbala. The priestess in those days was a woman called Chika. She was full of the power of her god, and she was greatly feared. Unoka stood before her and began his story. "Every year," he said sadly, "before I put any crop in the earth, I sacrifice a cock to Ani, the owner of all land. It is the law of our fathers. I also kill a cock at the shrine of Ifeji Oku, the god of yams. I clear the bush and set fire to it when it is dry. I sow the yams when the first rain has fallen, and stake them when the young tendrils appear. I weed." "Hold your peace," screamed the priestess, her voice terrible as it echoed through the dark void. "You have offended neither the gods nor your fathers. And when a man is at peace with his gods and his ancestors, his harvest will be good or bad according to the strength of his arm. You, Unoka, are known in all the clan for the weakness of your machete and your hoe. When your neighbors go out with their axe to cut down virgin forests, you sow your yams on exhausted farms that take no labor to clear. They cross seven rivers to make their farms. You stay at home and offer sacrifices to reluctant soil." Page 18. "Go home and work like a man." Unoka was an ill-fated man. He had a bad chi, or personal god, and evil fortune followed him to the grave, or rather to his death, for he had no grave. He died of the swelling, which was an abomination to the earth goddess. When a man was afflicted with swelling in the stomach and the limbs, he was not allowed to die in the house. He was carried to the evil forest and left there to die. There was the story of a very stubborn man who staggered back to his house and had to be carried again to the forest and tied to a tree. The sickness was an abomination to the earth, and so the victim could not be buried in her bowels. He died and rotted away above the earth and was not given the first or the second burial. Such was Unoka's fate. When they carried him away, he took with him his flute. With a father like Unoka, Okonkwo did not have the start in life which many young men had. He neither inherited a barn, nor a title, nor even a young wife. But in spite of these disadvantages, he had begun, even in his father's lifetime, to lay the foundations of a prosperous future. It was slow and painful, but he threw himself into it like one possessed. And indeed, he was possessed by the fear of his father's contemptible life and shameful death. There was a wealthy man in Okonkwo's village who had 3 huge barns, 9 wives, and 30 children. His name was Wakibie, and he had taken the highest but one title which a man could take in the clan. Page 19. It was for this man that Okonkwo worked to earn his first seed yams. He took a pot of palm wine and a cock to Wakibie. 2 elderly neighbors were sent for, and Wakibie's 2 grown-up sons were also present in his obi. He presented a kola nut and an alligator pepper, which were passed round for all to see and then returned to him. He broke the nut, saying, "We shall all live. We pray for life, children, a good harvest, and happiness. You will have what is good for you, and I will have what is good for me. Let the kite perch, and let the eagle perch too. If one says no to the other, let his wing break." After the kola nut had been eaten, Okonkwo brought his palm wine from the corner of the hut where it had been placed, and stood it in the center of the group. He addressed Wakibie, calling him "Our Father." "Nai," he said, "I have brought you this little kola. As our people say, a man who pays respect to the great paves the way for his own greatness. I've come to pay you my respects, and also to ask a favor. But let us drink the wine first." Everybody thanked Okonkwo, and the neighbors brought out their drinking horns from the goatskin bags they carried. Wakibie brought down his own horn, which was fastened to the rafters. The younger of his sons, who was also the youngest man in the group, moved to the center, raised the pot on his left knee, and began to pour out the wine. The first cup went to Okonkwo, who must taste his wine before anyone else. Then the group drank, beginning with the eldest man. When everyone had drunk 2 or 3 horns, Wakibie sent for his wives. Page 20. Some of them were not at home, and only 4 came in. "Is Anasi not in?" he asked them. They said she was coming. Anasi was the first wife, and the others could not drink before her, and so they stood waiting. Anasi was a middle-aged woman, tall and strongly built. There was authority in her bearing, and she looked every inch the ruler of the women folk in a large and prosperous family. She wore the anklet of her husband's titles, which the first wife alone could wear. She walked up to her husband and accepted the horn from him. She then went down on one knee, drank a little, and handed back the horn. She rose, called him by his name, and went back to her hut. The other wives drank in the same way, in their proper order, and went away. The men then continued their drinking and talking. Oguefi Irigo was talking about the palm wine tapper, Obiako, who suddenly gave up his trade. "There must be something behind it," he said, wiping the foam of wine from his moustache with the back of his left hand. "There must be a reason for it. A toad does not run in the daytime for nothing." "Some say the oracle warned him that he would fall off a palm tree and kill himself," said Aku Kalia. "Obiako has always been a strange one," said Wakibie. "I've heard that many years ago, when his father had not been dead very long, he had gone to consult the oracle. The oracle said to him, 'Your dead father wants you to sacrifice a goat to him.' 'Do you know what he told the oracle?' he said. 'Ask my dead father if he ever had a fowl when he was alive.'" Page 21. Everybody laughed heartily except Okonkwo, who laughed uneasily because, as the saying goes, an old woman is always uneasy when dry bones are mentioned in a proverb. Okonkwo remembered his own father. At last the young man who was pouring out the wine held up half a horn of the thick white dregs and said, "What we are eating is finished." "We have seen it," the others replied. "Who will drink the dregs?" he asked. "Whoever has a job in hand," said Idigo, looking at Wakibie's eldest son, Iguelo, with a malicious twinkle in his eye. Everybody agreed that Iguelo should drink the dregs. He accepted the half-full horn from his brother and drank it. As Idigo had said, Iguelo had a job in hand because he had married his first wife a month or two before. the thick dregs of palm wine were supposed to be good for men who were going in to their wives. After the wine had been drunk, Okonkwo laid his difficulties before Wakibie. "I have come to you for help," he said. "Perhaps you can already guess what it is. I have cleared a farm, but have no yams to sow. I know what it is to ask a man to trust another with his yams, especially these days when young men are afraid of hard work. I am not afraid of work. The lizard that jumped from the high Iroko tree to the ground said he would praise himself if no one else did. I began to fend for myself at an age when most people still suck at their mother's breasts. If you give me some yam seeds, I shall not fail you." Wakibie cleared his throat. "It pleases me to see a young man like you these days, when our youth has gone so soft." Page 22. "Many young men have come to me to ask for yams, but I have refused because I knew they would just dump them in the earth and leave them to be choked by weeds. When I say no to them, they think I'm hard-hearted, but it is not so. Eneke, the bird, says that since men have learned to shoot without missing, he has learned to fly without perching. I have learned to be stingy with my yams. But I can trust you. I know it as I look at you. As our fathers said, you can tell a ripe corn by its look. I shall give you twice 400 yams. Go ahead and prepare your farm." Okonkwo thanked him again and again and went home feeling happy. He knew that Wakibie would not refuse him, but he had not expected that he would be so generous. He had not hoped to get more than 400 seeds. He would now have to make a bigger farm. He hoped to get another 400 yams from one of his father's friends at Isiuzo. Sharecropping was a very slow way of building up a barn of one's own. After all the toil, one only got a third of the harvest. But for a young man whose father had no yams, there was no other way. And what made it worse in Okonkwo's case was that he had to support his mother and two sisters from his meager harvest. And supporting his mother also meant supporting his father. She could not be expected to cook and eat while her husband starved. And so, at a very early age, when he was striving desperately to build a barn through sharecropping, Okonkwo was also fending for his father's house. It was like pouring grains of corn into a bag full of holes. His mother and sisters worked hard enough, but they grew women's crops, like cocoa yams, beans, and cassava. Page 23. Yam, the king of crops, was a man's crop. The year that Okonkwo took 800 seed yams from Wakibie was the worst year in living memory. Nothing happened at its proper time. It was either too early or too late. It seemed as if the world had gone mad. The first rains were late, and when they came, lasted only a brief moment. The blazing sun returned, more fierce than it had ever been known, and scorched all the green that had appeared with the rains. The earth burned like hot coals and roasted all the yams that had been sown. Like all good farmers, Okonkwo had begun to sow with the first rains. He had sown 400 seeds when the rains dried up and the heat returned. He watched the sky all day for signs of rain clouds and lay awake all night. In the morning, he went back to his farm and saw the withering tendrils. He had tried to protect them from the smoldering earth by making rings of thick sisal leaves around them. But by the end of the day, the sisal rings were burned dry and gray. He changed them every day and prayed that the rain might fall in the night. But the drought continued for 8 market weeks, and the yams were killed. Some farmers had not planted their yams yet. They were the lazy, easy-going ones who always put off clearing their farms as long as they could. This year, they were the wise ones. They sympathized with their neighbors with much shaking of the head, but inwardly they were happy for what they took to be their own foresight. Page 24. Okonkwo planted what was left of his seed yams when the rains finally returned. He had one consolation. The yams he had sown before the drought were his own.